make me all tippy.
Oh.
Bimbly.
You're listening to another Woodshop podcast.
Hello.
Sorry.
Yeah, we really need an intro in here. Awkward dancing is amazing. Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 161 of another Woodshop podcast. But this week we're joined by one of my favorite people in our maker community, a fellow nerd with a unique and fun approach to tackling all of his projects, like sharpening a pencil with his CNC. Take that, Jimmy. From brewmaster to machinist to woodworker, is there anything he can't do? He might be pint-sized, but he's above average where it matters, being awesome, ladies. Adam Houston Barnett is here.
He might be pint-sized.
That was quite the intro. Thank you.
I try. I always stumble at one line. That's fine. Because it's all organic. I don't write this down.
I'll take it. Nobody has ever fluffed me like that.
Yeah, I mean, one group of people that fluffs us every week is our patrons. But before we get to them, and I'm definitely not stalling, that's the thing you should have had pulled up, Dan.
I knew I was forgetting.
What am I forgetting?
I knew I was forgetting something.
So while Dan,
I do this every week.
We have Adam Barnett here with us today, one of our good friends for many, many years. He's a great part of the community. He's also one of the reps from Rockler. That was one of his more new things, aside from being a musician, a brewmaster, a machinist, a dad, a gentle lover, and other things.
On Saturday nights.
Yeah, well, that's coming from me, not Kim. But now I am done stalling so that I can let Dan read the names of our patrons.
Let's hear about these patrons, man.
Yeah.
Only the high tier. Because this week... You don't ever talk about me.
We don't have any new patrons. However, we still want to give a big shout out to all our VIP patrons. And that list is as follows. Victor Aragema. Man, I still feel like I'm butchering that guy's name.
He said Aragema.
Aragema?
I think he messaged me about it. I'm probably butchering it too, Victor. I'm sorry.
Aragema.
He's one of my Jersey boys here. One of my locals.
Oh, hey, Jersey.
Major.
I'm sure he's from Central Jersey. Matthew Hoff, Nick Brim Woodworking, Matt Maynard from Patriotic Pines, Steve Iadarola, Phil Plant, lead singer of Led Zeppelin, Daniel Bryson, Bill Burkle, Malcolm at Bossa Nova Woodworks, Justin from Calvary Customs, Christian Tongue, Square Splinter, Michael Flickinger, Scotty Holland, the captain of potatoes over in Idaho, Mike Leiden, Max and Mindy Coons, Alexander Copajohns, and Jacob Miller. Big shout out to all our VIP patrons and all our patrons in general. We appreciate all of you. Thank you so much.
And an admiral.
As a low-tier patron, what up to the low-tier dudes?
Are
you a $2 patron, Adam? Who invited this guy?
No, I think I dropped down to that because you guys weren't offering enough.
Adam just tricked his way onto this podcast so that he could try to make the Patreon only meetup on a Wednesday at 2:00. Everyone can join.
I just want to throw that out there again. You guys were saying, okay,
we're not voting.
Thursday,
we're not doing it on a Wednesday.
Friday,
there's no
Saturday,
Wednesday. There's no
Sunday.
Wednesday. There's no Wednesday.
I think Wednesday is a great day.
On that subject,
I think, yes, go on, Pete. I was going to say the same thing. Go on.
Well, no, why don't you say it?
I think the people have spoken. I think we're going to do the monthly, at least, Patreon hangouts on Sunday. Sunday won by a margin of like 75 to 25. Yep. So,
at what time?
Sunday it's going to be. Well, that remains to be seen.
To be determined.
I think in the poll I said evening. So
it's going
to
be.
So we got to do another poll to find out what time on Sunday. Yeah.
No. We're going to do Sunday at 11 p.m. Central.
It's like, no. I got the school night. No, but it's probably going to be like a 6-7 o'clock Eastern. Yeah. And then Mountain can figure out what time zone they're in.
Mountain's not real.
What is
not real? There's no mountains. Earth is flat. So we'll figure that out. We'll probably do a second one just to get the best time for everyone. But that's going to be the hangout. And we're definitely doing the top two tiers. We might do the top three tiers. I don't know. Or we'll figure out how we want to do it. Or if it's everyone. Or I don't know. We're going to... We want to make sure that
maybe we mix it up. Maybe once a month we do top tier, and every quarter we do everybody.
Yeah, I think maybe this first one we do everyone. It'll be fun.
Okay, get
everyone
in there. Just let them know what they're missing.
Little
I think that's a great idea.
Little taste.
Yeah. Second it hits the lips. So I'm excited. It's gonna be a fun one.
I'm gonna be drinking enchiladas.
It's probably gonna be sometime in mid July. I think we're gonna do, because I think this weekend Dan's away. Next weekend I have something going on.
Yes.
But we're going to try to do...
Tomorrow, I'm going to my brother's third wedding. It's going to be spectacular.
This one's going to stick.
This one's going to stick.
Third time's the charm.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, it's like bowling. Third time's the charm. Turkey!
That's what they say.
Does he learn from mistakes?
No, he does not.
Ooh.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to this either, so it's fine.
Fool me thrice.
I love Thrice. It's one of my favorite bands.
Oh, so, I agree with you there, Adam. I just saw them. I didn't know that band you were talking about in the pre-show, but I like Thrice.
The Beatles?
No, what bear? Minus the bear. Minus the raccoon?
Stop doing equations, guys. They're both math guys.
Oh.
We were just trying to make a BJ joke.
Well, speaking of BJs, Adam, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you feel that you're important enough to be here?
Yeah, who invited you?
Well, there I go again with my very heartfelt intros. Adam,
how did you find your way here?
Give us the long staircase pitch.
It's a long road that got me here, man. So, yeah, woodworking definitely kind of took over right before the world fell apart. So I was working in a shop and a machine shop. This was a material handling shop, so it was mostly like pipe and joint, and we cut a lot of plastics.
Oh, I thought it was like a place they send things after they ship it, like, because you pay for shipping and handling.
No. So we like picture like flow racks. Like you take a plastic tub full of like parts.
I have to take flow racks
Ford
for my nasal drip.
Very different than that. But it was like conveyor racks kind of thing, and everything. Mm. So we made lots of stuff for like the big three, because I'm in Detroit, and we cut lots of plastic. So we had the CNC router there, and I had just gotten out of school for CNC machining and knew all that stuff. And it was one of the reasons they hired me as the production manager there. And I was like, hey, can I use this machine to carve some wood? And the boss was like, no. And I was like, oh, well, that sucks. I'm just going to build a CNC machine in my garage. Yeah. So I made like kind of like an open source kit kind of thing out of like extruded aluminum. It had like 10,000 screws. It took me probably a week and a half.
Like an
Avid? No. No, picture there. So there's a brand called Open Builds, and I bought the British version of it called an Ooze Nest. And had it imported from England because they have better.
Were the instructions like, "Hi, governor, put the screw here"?
They were in
English. Put the shop on a bobby.
And
that's my best accent.
English words read like English words, so it was okay.
Oh, that's
and so
did
I.
Did you have to
tighten
to metric foot pounds?
that is one of the problems I have. Like everything is. For that manufactured in metric. So that was a little bit of a challenge. But I got into that, and then the world fell apart and was like, well, I guess I'm just going to lean way heavier into this than originally planned. Because I was just thinking of like a side thing. You know, I was like, I'll use a CNC machine. And coming from the machining background, because I worked in a machine shop for like 18 years, I was like, I have all this knowledge and I can apply it to the artistic lifestyle that's in me and just make cool stuff. But then, you know, the world fell apart, so it was just like, I guess I'm a woodworker now. And then
what do you
got
mean
into
by
the
world
Instagram.
Fell apart?
The pandemic. It was 2020.
Yeah, I'm glad you explained it, because
I briefly
remember 07.
Yeah, no.
2001. So
I just didn't want to say any certain keywords and get the show flagged and all that stuff and get disclaimers.
We've been doing this a long time. The show got flagged a long time ago.
But yeah, so I formed just as an LLC in February of 2020, and then it was very shortly after that I was like, well, I got a lot of free time. So that's why I was like, I guess I'll make videos. Actually, my now fiance, she had made some videos of our daughter and stuff, and I was like, that's really cool. Like, what app did you use? And she sent me some, like,
the camera app.
Yeah. She's like, it's this button, it's on the bottom of every phone. But yeah, so I just started doing that thing and just kind of leaned into it, and it grew. But it's crazy, like, the path to that is, I don't know, like, everything just kind of led to where I am, and it's cool. So, like, out of high school, I graduated at 17, so I was, like, a kid, you know.
Humble brag.
Well, I started too early, so life sucked. Like, everybody was a year older than me, so it was always, like, a challenge with, like, school and stuff, because I was the runt. And I'm not exactly a
still
tall
there.
Dude. Yeah. So it was even harder. But it was just, I got out of high school, and then shortly after that, I was like, oh, I'm going to have kids. Oops. So I had to get a job, and then I'm in Metro Detroit. So you either work at a fast food place or you work in a machine shop. So I started working in a machine shop, and it was a natural progression for me. My dad was a woodworker, you know, just in the garage making stuff. So it was always in my mind that you just make things. And I've always been an artist. I was the nerd kid carrying around a sketchbook and stuff. But I got into the machine shop and started learning all that stuff. And then they had, you know, Metro Detroit shutdowns. I got laid off, and I was like, well, I play guitar, so I'll go work at Guitar Center. And I worked at Guitar Center, and that's kind of like, that was the catalyst. That's where I became who I feel I am now, was working there. They had an amazing management, and I worked for a great dude and, like, got confident in myself. And then it was extremely corporate, and I was like, I don't like where this is going. It was constant, like, carrot dangled in front of me. So every time I got a promotion, they
said, retail.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's retail. So every time I got a promotion, they took away the bonus for that the week before. So it was like, I'm climbing this ladder, but never getting any benefits. So I was like, okay, I'm out of here. And it was, you know, an abrupt exit. And I just went back to that machine shop and was like, hey, I know it's been 5 years, but can I come back? And they were like, oh yeah, absolutely. And then I very quickly moved up in there because I had all these management skills now. So I started running a department there. And then again, hated the job because it is hard work. And I did, like, tube bending, so it was a little bit different than, you know, we had a CNC section, and we had a paint shop, and there's, like, all these different facets of it, and I kind of did everything everywhere, which made it even harder, because the bosses were, you know, it was, like, a small family-run shop, and they were just, like, do everything, and I'm like, oh my god, and then they started making aftermarket truck parts, and when they came up with the idea originally, it was just because they didn't like a company they were making stuff for, and they were like, let's beat them at their own game. Hey, can you go make something? And I'm like, make what? Like, I don't have, like, blueprints. Like, there's nothing to make this from. And they were like, can you just make something? Well, lucky me, I'm that nerd that was an artist and has, like, I paid attention into school and was good at math and just started hand drawing prints and made all this stuff and fabricated it myself. And they were like, oh, cool, awesome. And took it to SEMA and won a bunch of awards. And I was like, hey, can I get a raise? And they were like, no. just work more overtime.
No,
we'll give you unlimited overtime. And I'm like, I don't want to work more. I want to make more money. The goal is to work less and make more, like, for everybody. Like, that's
you can work unlimited overtime.
Yeah, take less vacations.
Who in their right mind goes, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
So, to make ends meet, so at this time, I had never stopped having kids, so I had 3 kids now, and I love my children, and having kids was the main catalyst of, like, oh, I gotta get a job, and that's what made me grow up in life, and yeah, I did it way too early, and I might have done things different, but I love my kids, and the reason I never stopped working was for them, you know? So, I needed more money to make ends meet. I had started a lawn care thing on the side, so I'm cutting lawns every day. I'm working in the machine shop with unlimited overtime. I was like, I need to go to school. So I asked my bosses if I could go to school and learn how to do computer-aided design and, you know, do this stuff the right way instead of hand-drawing prints and stuff. And they were like, no, we don't want you to go to school, and you're going to be sitting there learning how to draw gear.
Don't you be learning books and stuff?
Yeah, we don't want you drawing gears in the computer
Stupid
program. That's not going to help. Yeah, so I went to school on my own, and I had, before this, had already gone to college thinking that I was going to open a brewery. So I was kind of okay
one
with
does.
Yeah, I don't
usually
know.
When people go to college, they they just hang out at a brewery or drink out of a
right?
brewery. Or...
Yeah.
Barnett Custom Brewskis?
Yeah. And then, Barnett Brews was going to be the brewery name. But yeah, they started a brewing program at a local school right after I was sitting on my back porch one day, just stressed out in life, and was like, I'm just gonna start my own business. I need to fix things in my life and make it better. So I went to school for brewing and then found out that there was no money in that. I was really good at it and I enjoyed it. It was definitely a passion, but it was one of those things you don't make your hobby a job. And I don't think I was passionate enough. Right. But I don't think I was passionate enough about it. You know, I loved drinking beer, obviously. Who doesn't? But brewing it, the business side of it was just, I was like, I don't want to get into that because that would rob all the joy. So I went to school for that. But then when my bosses said, no, I can't, they wouldn't help me go to school for making them stupid amounts of money. I was like, well, I'll just do it on my own. So I got into a certificate program for CNC machining and computer-aided design and all that stuff. And funny enough, at that time, they said no, they didn't want to help me do that because I would be drawing gears. And then that aftermarket truck company, their logo was a gear. And I was hand-drawing their stupid gear. I was like, man, it'd be so cool. But yeah, so I went to school for that and then was applying for more jobs, just trying to move up in life. And that's when I got into that material handling job a year and a half before the pandemic.
So the most recent thing come up.
So I get that question all the time. So I got into the woodworking and, the pandemic, everything, that shop I was working in, they just shut down. They just said, nah, nobody can come back. So I was like, crap, I need a job. So that machine shop called me back again. And I was like, all right, here we go again, round three. And I was back there and I hated it. But things were better in my life. I had woodworking and I was super passionate about it. And it was something that was turning into a job that I was happy with. And I was like, I can continue doing this. And I love doing it. And I was hitting Etsy hard and doing custom commissions. I was like, I love this. I want this to be the main thing. And Kim and I were, figuring out our life. I'm like, I want to be one family and one home and one job. I just want everything to fall into place. And everybody asked me, how did you get a job as a content creator, as a social media person for Rockler?
Oh, I love this story. Go ahead.
I applied for it.
Whoa. Crazy.
Yeah. I was on Instagram flipping through stories and an ad popped up and said, Rockler is hiring and they're open to remote. And I was like, this could be a dream come true. And Kim and I were trying to go somewhere. We were needed to leave. And there was time pressing. And I'm like, I understand. I have to fill this out. If I don't at least throw my name into this hat, I will regret it forever. And she was like, all right, fine. And I got the job. So I don't know. It just, everything worked out. They were happy that I had retail experience. They were happy that I had management experience. They were happy that I had machining and I understood woodworking and making.
From the sounds of it, you had all the experience.
Yeah. It just, I don't know.
The beer, the flannel, all that.
The beer, the flannel. Yeah. I don't know.
Dan applied for one of those positions once too. He's still waiting to hear back.
Yeah.
I talked to those folks at the last WorkbenchCon and I met the person that got the job. I don't think I'm getting it.
You never know. Don't give up. Don't
give up. Might still be in a trial period.
Still on the table. No, I think it's great. So just before we started recording the show, I learned that Adam went to school to brew beer.
Yeah.
That is fascinating to me. I think that grabbed my attention more than anything else.
It's amazing.
Do you brew your own beer to this day, or do you lean into that at all?
I haven't brewed in, it's been years now. I miss it.
That's too bad. I was going to try to talk you into like brewing a special batch for brew? Workbench Con next year or something.
Oh, that'd
something
be cool.
Like that.
AW Pilsner.
I wouldn't mind getting back into it. Like, you know, because I was renting a house and I had the kids there and Kim had a house and we were all like, you know, one family in multiple houses. And now we have remedied that and we're all in one house and everything. And I kind of like have that itch again. Like,
well, you're finally in one spot.
I can totally understand that.
You know, you got the basement. You can start brewing stuff there because you got the shop now.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And I'm still super passionate about woodworking, but I feel like I should also have a hobby that isn't woodworking.
hobby you don't have to do content around?
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't want to do content around beer. I probably would. I don't know. I'd probably fall into
Let's face it. You totally would.
Dan has a hobby like that. It's naps. He doesn't do content
I can't
around
do
it. The done naps.
The done naps.
I need to figure out how to do content around naps. I mean, that would be...
Dude, there's a niche for it. Absolutely. You just need to make
do
a
live
TikTok
stream.
Page
you gotta do a live
of
stream.
Live stream
napping.
Of naps?
Yeah. Yes,
done naps. Done naps live.
Like, people watch the Truman Show. It'll be just the Dunlap Show.
All right. Okay. All right. I'll have to figure something out.
Watching Dunnaps. Reruns of old Dunlap shows to help you fall asleep.
Remember that time that he rolled over?
That was great. Season
he just
two
started
was awesome.
Screaming in the middle of the night. Remember that?
He got a CPAP machine in season three.
Remember that time he almost died? Yeah, that's what everyone's watching for. They're waiting for that moment where you're just, is he going to die? Is he going to die? No. Nope.
People are on the edge of their seat.
Oh, he started breathing again. All right.
Okay.
Or you drink when he snores and you get slammed.
Oh, dude, people would die.
Okay. Oh, God.
This has been fun.
Well, so... Adam, we're going to do a bit of a little bit of a topic while we're chatting with you, because you have some experience of working with brands.
I do.
From both sides. We had a couple questions about it, and I guess we'll just kind of get into the topics, I think, within the questions. But should we play some of those intros we got?
Yes, let's do intros first.
Okay, so let's see here. We got, if you guys don't remember, we are looking for a new intro, and we've got some pretty good contenders. Had someone call in today with a short one, someone with a long one, and someone with a classic funny goodie. I love it. So if you do want to be forever entombed?
Entombed.
Kind of dark. I don't know. Forever.
That's too soon.
Memorialized.
You can't say entombed right now with the whole submarine thing going on.
In AWP history, I want to be part of it. You know, you can be a part of it by being part of the intro if you've got that sweet, sweet voice. So let's start with this one. This is a pretty short one. I like it. Short, sweet, to the point. Let's see.
Who's doing this intro?
Adam, I don't know how to say it.
Barnetti.
You're listening to another Woodshop podcast. Sorry.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. By our very own Adam Barnett. It's short, so sweet, to the point. It sets the expectations right. It just makes you want to shrug and go, I got an hour to kill. All right, then we got, let's see. Next one's from Kimini.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, adults of all ages, your electronic device proudly brings to you the tag team podcast hosts of the world. Daniel from Daniel Dunlap's Woodworks, Peter from Petrie's Workshop, another Woodshop podcast. And if you're not sure this is a podcast for you, I got two words for you. Stay tuned.
Thank you, Kamani, but I don't think we can use that because of the copyright implications.
Yes, it's because of the song at the end.
You might get a strike. You might.
And then we got another great one from Malcolm from Bossa Nova Woodworks.
Oh, yes.
You're about to listen to another Woodshop podcast with Daniel Dunlap of Daniel Dunlap Woodworks and Peter Kapar of Petrie's Workshop. You can find Dan and Pete, as well as the podcast, on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Patreon, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Discord, Pinterest, Telegram, Nextdoor, Vimeo, Reddit, Campfire, MySpace, Friendster, Adult Friend Finder, Troth Sensual, Truth Central, WhatsApp, What's on My Bench app, Grindr, Parler, Clapper, Tinder, Tumblr, Bumble, Rumble, OnlyFans, OnlyDans, OnlyFeet, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and wherever else mediocre podcasts can be found.
He forgot Farmers Only, Christian Mingle, and Yelp.
Just Yelp. It's a big one. And flatearth.globe. So
thank you.
But especially.
Thank you, Malcolm, but you kind of dropped the ball.
Malcolm, honestly, that's perfect. Without, like, cut out like 5 to 20 of the last ones. But that, see, Malcolm's the one to beat. That and Adam, sorry.
No, Adam, even though Adam's here, I'm not trying to suck up to Adam. That was amazing.
Yeah, we got to work that into my favorite Easter egg or something this time. All right, but let's, well, we could also do this. And why don't we get into actual questions now? And I should really have all my sound effects ready to go. But, oh, what is this?
Are we doing the topic? Oh, Black Betty!
There it is. Yeah, so we'll jump into topic off the questions. Let's start with the one that's not on a topic, which is from my boy Thomas from France.
Yo. His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy, there's vomit on his sweater already.
French
spaghetti.
Hey guys, my question for tonight is the following.
French spaghetti.
What is the craziest or funniest project you made, whether it was commissioned or not? As an example of what I mean by crazy or funny, there's a guy in France which specialty is to make wooden sex toys. He even have a patent finish for its creations. I wonder if he would use wenge for those that are not cowards. Anyway, speaking of sticking stuff in butts, what would be your advice for not getting, you know, by a company you want to work with? All right, bye guys.
What's your advice for that?
So, before
hold on, read the transcript.
By the way, we have completely forgotten what's on the bench.
Oh, we have.
So let's answer Tomas' question, and then what's on a bench that real quick, and then we'll jump.
Hold on, did you play What's on the Bench?
I did not.
Oh, did I? Because I wrote that down. You didn't play it.
So I played What's on a Bench, and then we went into questions? Oh my God, I am so fried today. I'm still on medication.
I don't know if
I'm
you
looping.
Played it or not, but I did.
And then we went into questions like idiots. So
what episode is this?
161. We'll figure it out. Season 2, though, it's different.
Season 2. Okay.
Well, Adam's throwing me off with his face and whatnot.
I am the best guest you've had in this season.
But you know what? Let's answer Tomas' question.
Okay.
And then, by the way, I didn't catch this when he was saying it, but he said apparently this guy has a patented finish for his hum creations. Hum, because they're. Yeah. So he says there's a woodworker apparently in France that specializes in sex toys, and he has a patented wood finish too. Then he goes to make the joke that wonder if a wenge would be a good wood to use for that.
For people who are not cowards, is what he said.
Yeah. And to anyone that has ever used wenge knows that it's very splintery.
Oh, it's super splintery.
It shatters. It's not good. But then he said, you know, speaking of sticking stuff in your butt, what advice do you have to keep a brand from, you know, or getting you knowed by a brand that you're working with? So basically, what's your advice for not getting screwed by a brand? So Dan, care to kick this off?
My advice for not getting bent over by a brand, just... Know your worth, which I know is kind of like a cop out, but you have to understand that your time is valuable. Okay, your time is valuable. Your reach is valuable. So everything has like a perceived value on it, and that's the thing. It's a perceived value. it isn't a realized value until you get somebody to pay you those dollars that you perceive that you're worth. So my advice for that is to go in with confidence. Be confident. Don't be cocky. Don't be a jerk, but just kind of like go in with confidence. Like when you're buying a vehicle. When I buy a vehicle, I go into the dealership kind of like I kind of strut in like I own the place, but I'm not overconfident. Yeah, exactly. I kind of strut in like I own the place, but I'm not overconfident. I'm not a cocky jerk, and I'm not looking to make enemies. You know, I'm looking to make friends, but I carry myself with a confidence. So it really is a fine line of, you know, confidence versus cocky. And you know what? If I had the magic formula and the answer, I feel like I could probably make billions of dollars on this, but unfortunately I don't. So let's hear what Adam has to say.
Well, definitely I'm going to parrot that. You got to have confidence in yourself and understand your worth and your value. The reason anybody is going to work with a brand is because that brand wants access to your audience. And you put in the work to grow that following and create that community and have that number that sits there. Like, okay, we want to talk about our number. Mine's bigger, yours bigger. Like that, whatever. But the fact of the matter is that you have a value because you put in the time to grow an audience. And that audience is your platform. That's what the brand wants to reach. So have confidence in that. Understand that you have value. Don't do things for free. There's basically two ways that you can go into working with a brand. You can either get paid to make some content, or they can give you something that you want to make content that they want. So it's a win-win for them either way, but it needs to be a win for you too. And if they're offering you something that you don't need in your shop, something that you don't want, then it's not worth it. So don't just say yes. Don't get excited like, oh, I'm going to work with a brand. Okay, you're going to send me a
contour gauge.
Yeah, like, no, absolutely not. Like, I don't need a contour gauge, man. Like, I know how to use a pencil.
Well, my last one got used up. I need, they're like, disposable, right?
Right. Yeah, you throw them away every time you use them.
Yeah.
But once you push in the thing, it's a one-way thing, right?
Locks. Yeah. It's like zip ties. Once you push them in and you get that contour, you spray Starbond on it and you lock it in.
Yeah, like one Legos. Use only. Well, they have debonder, so.
Oh, is that a thing? I didn't know. I learned stuff here.
But at least for me, I've done paid things for brands. I've done things just for stuff. And there was definitely a point where, and I think it was actually a contour gauge when it was, hey, we'll send you this thing and we want you to make a reel and we want you to make a static post and we want you. And I was like, do you know how much work that is? Like, you're asking me to put in like tons of hours. And I don't know if you heard me talk about before, like, I'm always working multiple jobs and trying to spin 900 plates in life. Like, I'm going to value my time because you're asking me to spend time not working on my business, making products for customers that are paying me, or you're asking me to take time away from my family or my free time that is where I get a sliver of sanity from. Like, no, that I have a value to that. So there's a number that's worth to me. And you offer that to them. And if they say no, that's okay. The worst they can say is no. Like, no, yep, isn't going to hurt anybody. Get used to hearing no. Like, you're a salesman at that point. At this point, when you're trying to work with a brand, you're selling yourself and your value. And if they say no, who cares? Like, know your worth and your value, and it's okay to hear that no. But make sure that you're not doing things for free.
You know, for the longest time, I was frightened of hearing the word no.
Yeah.
It would literally paralyze me. I was deathly afraid of hearing the word no. Like, my ego couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to realize that, you know what? No is part of the process.
You get comfortable with that, and that's something that I learned working retail and in sales. And you know, it was a commission job that I worked when I worked at Guitar Center. They're not commission anymore, but it was commission sales, and that was like I didn't want to be a pushy salesman. That was one of the reasons I wanted to work at Guitar Center was because I wanted to do it better than everybody that I had dealt with as a customer there. I was like, these guys are pushy. They're not helping me find what I need, and they don't care about me leaving with what I want and what I need to be happy. They're just trying to make me buy all this stuff. And so I went in with, you know, just heart and was like, I'm not getting any sales and I'm going to get fired. And I told my boss that one day, I was like, I don't want to like ask people for their money. He goes, why? These people are coming in wanting to spend their money. Just ask them. The worst they can say is no. You know, so it's like, oh, you're right. Ask qualifying questions. Find out what they need, what they want. You are knowledgeable on the product and the thing. So as a brand and you know what you can deliver in content. Just ask them, hey, this is my value. Do you want to pay that? No? Okay. Bye. This is what I think you have that I want. The tool. Are you willing to send that tool to me and I'll make the content for it? Because then that's a win-win. No? Okay. Bye.
Or even, you don't even have to say goodbye after they say no. You could, you know, turn it
absolutely
a different direction and say, yeah, okay, what do you think this is worth to you? And you can kind of, that's how you start negotiating.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point too.
And yeah, every sale can be spun. And that was the other thing I learned in retail sales is, you know, it's, you get the no and you say, okay, what are you unsure of? That was my favorite thing to say. It was like, okay, I just asked this person if they want to buy it and they said no. Why? So if a brand comes to you and says, hey, we want you to do this thing, and you say, okay, do you want to pay this? And they say no, and you say, okay, why? And you start that conversation. I think that's a very good point, Dan. Start the conversation. It's not over at no, but don't be afraid of the no.
Yeah. And then sometimes you just got to cast a net too. You never know, you know, like if you're reaching out to a brand. But as far as like the whole thing about, you know, how do you get a brand to not screw you over? It's very easy to say yes, like the guy said early on, especially when you're starting out, you get excited about that company reaches out to you and you're like, oh, well, I could totally use that thing that I also don't kind of need. And sometimes you do need or whatever. And, but then they ask something ridiculous and you're like, okay, cool. I mean, I've even had this with large tool brands where they were like, yeah, we'd want 2 YouTube videos, but like this product, I can barely get 1 YouTube video out of it. Like, you know, like how to like, and immediately I thought it was like, okay, well, I don't think I could do 2 videos on this. And they're like, well, what about, and like, I didn't even rebuttal at the time. They were like, okay, how about 1 video and then like 2 reels or something. I'm like, yes, much less work for me. Thank you.
Manage expectations.
You know, you got to talk about it. Any other thing, like, you know, apply some kind of hourly rate to your time. If a company asks you for a dedicated YouTube video, that better be a good product because that's going to take you anywhere from 5 to 20 hours, if not more, to do a YouTube video, potentially, you know, because like in most cases, people are going to take a little while. Like I take weeks. So,
months
sometimes. Yeah, exactly. Same. We just love it. And so, you know, think about it. Cause like, if let's say, you know, like I'll use, you guys remember the Hoto drills, like Hoto was coming out. They have a lot of really pretty products.
Yes, yes.
They look really nice. I'm not going to, I have one of those drills. I think it's great. It's super neat. I use it inside the house. I don't use it in a shop. I didn't need another drill. I didn't need it at all. And if they had come at me and were like, we'd like a YouTube video and 2 posts, I would just immediately be like, that's not worth my time. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's a really cool product. Not worth my time. But they're like, no, we'd love like for you to use it, leave a review and do a dedicated post and maybe a story if you could. Like that is completely reasonable. Did I need the product? No, but it was still like fun to just work with the brand. It's always nice to be in practice. It's a really neat product too. So it's like, you got to make it worth your while. Another thing could be like right now we're reaching out to brands. And it's what I was talking about, tossing the net. I'm trying to get my biggest bang for the buck. So we're working on the renovation of our laundry room we're going to be starting soon. And we have a fridge in there. And I was like, what if we get a smaller fridge? I'm like, I can spend $300 to $1,000 on a new drink fridge. But like, we reached out to a company that makes them. And we basically were like, hey, like, we're renovating this, whatever. Here's what we're thinking. We'd love to partner up with you guys again and see if you'd want to be a part of it. And like, if they say no, we like kind of, it doesn't change it anything for us. But if they say yes, it improves the project, but I'm not having to do any dedicated content for it. Like, I'm already going to be doing content around this project. So right. I'm essentially doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on the same content that's already coming out. You're not doing something just around that one item. So that's why it's nice to, like, when you're renovating like a whole room or something, or you can throw in some appliance there or redoing a part of the shop and you can use the tool in there. You know, it's easier because like you're already doing the work. So make it easier on yourself and try to save yourself some money and time.
I think the big takeaway from everything you just say, as Dan and I were saying, don't be afraid to hear no. What you're saying is don't be afraid to say no.
Say no. Yeah.
It's the same you could totally side of say the coin. No. That's how you don't get bent over by a brand, is when they start asking for stuff that is unreasonable, say no.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's say 30% off of a $3,000 tool with a big company for two YouTube videos and whatever. It's like,
it's $1,000 off, but
it's two entire YouTube videos, hours of my time, two Instagram posts on top of that. And like having to slow down everything because I have to shoot content around it. Is that worth $1,000? It might be. And it's exciting. I've done it. You know, it's cool. Yeah. Like, the discount's still nice. The relationship's good. But sometimes it's like, no, like, I'm going to lose $5,000 of work
exactly
this month because of this $1,000 deal that I could have just like spent the extra $1,000.
The value of your time and what you would be doing with that time if you weren't shooting a YouTube video. How much would you be making doing that?
Exactly. Apply the value to the time that it's going to take you. And be very honest with yourself. If you're like, yeah, I could do a YouTube video in 3 hours, talk in head and then quick edit. Like, okay, awesome. Then you're...
And speaking of being honest, be honest with who you're talking to as well as far as the brand. Don't give them like unreal like things that you can provide. Be completely honest on what you can do and what they can expect.
Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
That's bending yourself over.
Yeah.
Don't bend yourself over.
Actually, so why don't we do this?
Got a bad back.
It's a great question, Tamat. And we have one more question around working with brands as well.
Oh, we didn't finish one of the questions for Tamat.
Oh, was it?
Don't use Wenge.
Don't use Wenge.
Splinters. Yeah. No way, man. No way.
Don't use Wenge. Use Cocobolo. Go on.
What if you just coat the whole thing in epoxy?
It's not food safe.
I don't think a lot of
people are eating it. That's on the like outside end, the exit. Never mind.
Don't say
it. All right. Kimani!
Are we going to what's on our bench?
Hey, guys. It's Kimani. Wait. Sorry. There's a podcast on in the background. Okay. So my question, I have a couple questions. First question is... does 2:30 p.m. still count as around 2 o'clock? I'm just asking for a friend who got robbed by Pete at WorkbenchCon.
You're too slow.
And my next question is about brands. So I know there are some brands who kind of work with people, you know, regardless of their account size, no matter what, if they kind of like their stuff. And I know there are other brands that... they kind of set limits in terms of like, you know, based on a person's follower count. Do you know, or, you know, any of you, is there an appropriate ROI that they've seen from doing that? Like, you know, you work with someone who has 10,000 followers versus somebody who has 100,000 followers. Are there any like metrics to say that you've seen more traffic or engagement from working with the person who has the higher follower count versus somebody with a lower follower count? All right. Thanks. Bye.
Pete, I think he threw you under the bus first. So
Yeah, well, Kamani's referring to the fact that I graciously offered Rockler free shipping on all their tools from the booth to my house by driving it myself. And I was there early, and by early, I mean, I was pretty much there like half of that day just hanging out with Adam and Megan. And I think Jay was gone at that time already.
Oh, look at him name dropping over here. Okay.
Yeah, I know the whole team. Jay's one of the designers. He showed me the tools that he was working on. I have one in my shop. He's my hero. I have his picture on the door. I hit it when I get in there. You know?
Jay's a good guy, man.
Yeah. So as far as his other question, because I know Dan, his eyes glazed over when he heard metrics and whatever. You just forgot it. Basically, Kamani's saying that, you know, there's kind of two different types of how brands work with content creators. Some we've all gotten hit with sorry, we only work with accounts that are 10,000 and up, 20,000 and up, 100,000 and up. You know, we've all gotten that message back, almost worse than a no, because
it hurts a little.
Yeah. It hurts.
You take it personal, but you can't. That's what we were talking about.
You can't.
The worst they can say is no.
You will. You'll take it personally.
It does.
But then there's the ones that seem to work with anyone, and then there's ones that seem to be working with anyone, but they don't want to work with you. You know, there's all different types, and I cannot stress this enough. I've said this so many times on this podcast. On the other end of that conversation is a person, is an Adam, is Megan, is John, is Malcolm, whatever, like whoever I've worked with in the past, like he handles one of the, not that Malcolm,
it's a
different
brand that told you no.
Oh, it's he's in the middle.
So at the end of that is another person. Sometimes they're just trying to turn you down the nicest way they can, you know, and you can't just always come at them with like, oh, hey, I want this. The reason you might see sometimes a smaller account working with a brand that you would love to work with is because they just pitched a better idea. Because yes, some of these companies might have metrics on this, and yeah, we get better views from an account this size, and this guy's account has, you know, 100,000 views on every one of his reels. This guy's account has 10,000 views on every one of his reels. But the guy that's 10,000 views does way crazier and more fun and obscure projects. So we kind of want to work with that guy. So it doesn't always necessarily translate like bigger account, better views. You're definitely going to work with the brand. Sometimes the better idea or the better pitch, or just the fact that maybe you've been courting the brand for a while, talking with them for a while. And
we've talked about that in the past.
Yeah. Like courting a brand is fine. It's you're essentially starting a relationship with a stranger, you know, on the internet. It's great.
Hey, can I buy you a drink?
Yeah. Like, you know, like, we've known Adam for what, 3 years now?
At probably? Least 3 years.
Years.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's been pretty much all of COVID. Like we met pretty early.
All of
on,
COVID,
yeah,
we definitely got closer. Yeah. I think I followed all of you before that.
And like we're already friends. We've met multiple times at Maker Camp. And then he happened to work at Rockler. And it just like, we already had a rapport, you know? So it's not like, oh, he got me in. Like, no, like we've already had a rapport. I've already had a rapport with Rockler, mm-hmm. and then the two just seemingly, you know, merged into one very handsome man.
I can speak more to this in a minute.
Yeah. So that's kind of my take on it. Like, don't get discouraged by the whole, like, oh, this size account. And I'll go right back to the whole cast a wide net. Don't always just hit up one brand every couple months.
Yeah. Cast a wide net because not every brand has the same like metric that they're looking at. You know, some brands want just solid numbers. Some brands want engagement. Some brands want creativity. Some brands want like a bubbly personality. Like you never know what these people want or what these brands want. It's really what am I looking for? Like a crapshoot or whatever. The great Michael Scott said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky. So, I mean, that's like the best way to put it. A brand is a business, but like Pete said, it is a person on the other end. And we're all kind of different. They're all looking for different things. So, you just never know. There's no metric to follow. There's no formula. Yeah, Adam, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Trying to think of how to put this all in order. So as far as like numbers and like, oh, the follower, there are brands that are looking at, okay, this person has more followers. The reason brands are working with influencers is because they have influence. And the more influence...
Wait, slow down. I'm writing this down.
The more influence that you have...
How do you spell influence?
But the more influence that you have, the more valuable you could be to that brand. But there's some brands that are looking at numbers, and there's some brands that are looking at the value that you have to your audience. So there's kind of a shift happening right now where people
That's
are
what I'm saying. Influence means different things to different brands.
Yeah, yeah. So some brands are just looking for that number, and they're, you know, we don't want to work with you unless you got 100,000 followers on YouTube. I don't care how many you have on TikTok. I don't care how many you have on Instagram. It's a, you know, we care about this. But then there's this shift happening in the market too, where people are looking at micro influencers because they're starting to realize, like, well, this person has 2,000 followers, but those 2,000 followers are dedicated. They care about what that person is saying and doing. They're listening to them. They're learning from them. So those 2,000 followers, they're feeling are more valuable than the 100,000 followers that this other person has just because some viral video went wild and the algorithm showed everybody, hey, look at this. And everybody went, oh, okay, subscribe, follow. But then they never listen to it again. They're not looking at the stories. They're not looking at the person, and they don't know their name, and they're not invested. Yeah, they're not invested in that. So there's a mix of that. So is there a number? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I think what's more important about that is what you were saying with, you know, cast the wide net. Maybe that person that's working with that brand that seems to work with everybody, maybe they're just there because they got there first. You need to put yourself out there. If you feel like you have a value and you want to work with brands and you have an idea that would be of value to that brand and there would be value of you using that product to you, that's a win-win. Ask. Just throw it out there. Get out there and say it. Somebody else might be doing it already because they were quicker. They just asked first. That might all be all that it is, you know? It might not be because you aren't good enough. Your number of followers and subscribers isn't high enough. It might not be that at all. Don't take that personally. A lot of the time, brands are a business, and they have X amount of dollars that they can spend on marketing, which means X amount of dollars they can pay influencers, X amount of dollars of product that they can ship to influencers. They might just be maxed out for the year. Mm-hmm. Don't think, again, back to that conversation isn't over statement. Don't think that just because they said no now doesn't mean they're not going to say no in 6 months or next year, because it's a business. And so are you doing this, trying to make money from people. It's a business. The fiscal year restarts. Just say, hey, okay, you're not interested now. What if I check back in with you in 6 months? You know, do you think you guys will be looking for more marketing at that time? Maybe ask for a time period. Hey, when do you guys reevaluate for the year what marketing strategies you want to go after?
That's a very
good
point.
Can I check back in with you and, you know, find out when their fiscal years restart? Some people restart, you know, in the last quarter before the end of the year. So like September, October is a great time to start talking to brands, or maybe they just, you know, start in January, restart, you know, just start that conversation, because like Pete said, there is a person on that other end, and how you engage with that brand. Are you following them already? Because Instagram tells you, and I'll tell you, I laugh often when people are like, yo, where's that sponsorship, Rockler? And I'm like, this is the first message they've ever sent to Rockler. They are not following Rockler. You know, like, it's just like, so when they throw that out there, I'm like, I don't know who you are. But at the same time, there's these other people, and I'm not the person that makes the say on whether we're going to work with a brand or this or that. I'm the social media moderator. I'm the person that passes that on to the people that make that decision. So if you and I have a relationship, there's probably going to be, like, when I pass that on, like, hey, yeah, this is this person that uses our stuff, likes our brand, doesn't talk poorly about our brand, has never had a reel or a video where they're slamming us. You know, we don't want negativity. A business is a business. They want good things. They don't want to give money to people that are saying bad things about them. Like, you just need to think like a business person. So, you know, it's not all about how many followers you have. It's not about that number. Some brands it is. Some people don't understand social media. Some people do. Some people look at it one way. Some people don't. Just cast, like Pete said, cast that wide net. Shoot it out there.
Shoot your shots.
Shoot your shot. make it easy for the brand, you know? Reach out with a specific idea and a plan. Don't just say, hey, you want to give me money? Like, no!
And that's another
thing. Reach out with an idea or a plan.
Yeah, make it easy.
Like Adam said, he has to send that to someone. So, like, Adam doesn't need to be sitting there figuring out, like, well, how am I going to sell this to my boss? Like, no, he should just literally copy or screenshot the message, send it to her or him or whatever, and be like, hey, this is a cool idea, and they're great, and I've worked with them before or whatever. Like, that's an easy sell. Like, Adam shouldn't have to sell that to them.
Yeah. But it definitely helps if you have an established audience, too, you know? You create rapport with the brand. You have a relationship. It's not about like all this magic mystery stuff. You're working with people. It's create a relationship. That's with everything in life. It's relationships. So create a relationship, have a plan and an idea that's mutually beneficial. Already have an audience established, whether that's 2,000, 200, 200,000. What is the value there? Pitch your idea. Have a relationship, open the door before you walk in saying, give me something.
Yeah. And don't close the door when you're done too. Like, keep this relationship going. Cause even if it was a small thing, you started out with the brand, it was like a small tool, whatever, like follow up with them in a while. Like, I have a list of all the brands I've ever worked with. And once in a while I'll go, I haven't talked to them in a while. I have like them on like little stickies. Move it over into the engage column. Like, do a post, do a story, tag them in something, just to try to keep them at the forefront of my mind. And sometimes I let it slip and I'll look at the board and I go, I haven't tagged this brand in like a year. Like, but I'd love to work with them in the future. I could definitely use them for the next project. Let me start fostering that relationship again. So don't forget about the oldies and goodies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Your value is a perceived thing. You know, you might think that you are worth more than you are to someone that might be thinking that you're less of what you are worth. And like, I reached out to Typebond long time ago. I was like, hey, I use your stuff all the time. And they're like, yeah, so does everyone else. You know? But I didn't close that door. And I was like, well, I'm not going to stop using Typebond because you guys said, no, you don't want to send me a bottle of Typebond. So I just kept buying Typebond. And then I flipped a bottle one day. And
I remember this. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
and yeah. Typebond was like, they were like, wait, is this a thing? And I was like,
shut up and take my money.
I was like, yeah, I'm calling it the Type Flip Challenge, just having fun in the community. And then they were like, we want to run with this. I was like, oh, okay. And they were like, can we? And then they saw now I only
they
had,
saw the value in it.
Yeah. They saw value for them and how I saw value for me. And because I didn't close that door when they first said no, I had a good relationship with them and I continually tagged them and we joked around and like there was a good relationship. I didn't end it when that. I was like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe later or something. And I only had like, 2,000 followers at the time when I did the Type Flip Challenge, and that went worldwide and it didn't really grow my account. But I'll tell you what, I love Typebond and Typebond loves me. And that relationship grew a lot after that. Don't close the door.
Right on.
Right on.
Good stuff. Yeah. All right. So why don't we now do a quick What's on the Bench before
we're
going to
do What's on the Bench now
in
an hour.
Season two. Yeah, mixing it.
Remix. Another one.
What's on my bench?
Another one. All right. So, yeah, let's... What's on the bench now? So Adam, let's keep it brief, but Adam, what do you got going on this week? Anything fun?
Yeah, I got a bunch going on. I always, it's a struggle. So working for Rockler, half of my shop is a Rockler project on the day job. And then the other half of the shop is trying to do Etsy and I don't do too many commissions anymore just because it's just too much to balance right now. So I try to really, really keep my commission small. But right now, a friend in the community, my friend John, reached out and he wants a sign for his wall. And he was like, I'd really like you to do it. And I was honored and I said yes. So I have some maple glued up. And I went to the lumberyard. Man, I spent like an hour picking through maple trying to find curly maple. And I didn't think I found any at all. And I checked with him. I was like, I only can find clear maple. And he was like, that's fine. But I did find a piece. I don't know. He's probably going to listen to this. It's got some curl. So it's turning out better than I thought. So I got that all glued up. And I also got another commission to make a bunch of trays. So I make these like giant trays on the CNC machine. They're like 18 inches. I don't know if you guys ever saw those, like the giant pumpkin trays and the Christmas tree trays and like those huge trays I do. The person that does those, I haven't made anything for her and it's been a couple years now, but she was like, hey, I don't have that business anymore. So it's just a small quantity. And I was like, I'm not really taking commissions, but again, relationship, rapport. I was like, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to figure it out. It's going to take a minute. So I got four trays that are going to be like giant seashells. They're like 18 by 16 inches. And so I got a bunch of ash. I milled all that.
She sell them by the seashore by chance? Or
No. She doesn't. Okay. She should. There's probably a market there. But
from what I understand, there's a market.
I bought that like already S4S. I got the maple all milled at the lumber mill. So I got it home, just cut everything and glued it up. And then I stupidly ordered a replacement bit off Amazon instead of just getting it from either Rockler or Tools Today, which is where I usually get my CNC bits. And it got pushed back, and now it's not going to be here till tomorrow. So I've been waiting all week to just get going on that stuff.
Man, if only you had some sort of contact.
I know.
Where you could get stuff like that.
Well, see, I'm picky with my CNC bits, and it's something like, I don't know if I should even be saying this. Rockler might be mad. But I don't feel Rockler pushes CNC bits well enough. They don't. I wish it was something that
I wasn't aware that they sold them.
Part of me didn't even
They know do. Them. Yeah, Amana's on the website. And I don't feel like it's marketed properly. Like, as far as, like, CNC users, like, we know I want Amana bit number 46202. And you go to the Rockler website and you put in 46202 and it says, what's that? But you put in a Amana quarter inch down cut, and then you're like, oh, it is here.
It's so funny. It's such a brand specific thing.
But I feel like CNC users know those numbers, and like that's what we start thinking. So like I think if Rockler, if we could brand out, because we have great router bits and CNC bits and stuff, but they're just, I don't think we're branding the names and stuff as efficiently as we could, and I think it could probably hit that market better. And it, you know, I'm passionate about that. I'm a CNC person. Like, I come from that, and I wish that would happen. But yeah, so those are the things that are on Barnett Builds bench, is those two things, and then a very long list of things that I'm supposed to do for my daughter and Kim, and I really need to get on that stuff too. But as far as the Rockler bench, it's actually the bench. So the outfeed table that I made with the Rocksteady stands and the T-track table and everything. So I've been making a video of brackets for the, you just put a bracket on there and then you can put a hinge right on that. So I've got hinges and a jig that, you just drill the holes for the cup for the actual inset hinges and everything. So I've been doing that this week. And what's funny is like, I have a lot of creative control with the videos, which is awesome. And another reason that I love my job and I love my boss and, I love Rockler, that they're open to it and they love everything I do, but I'm really picky with it. And like halfway through shooting this video, I was like, this is trash. I don't like what I've done. And I totally scrapped the whole video and like wrote a new script and just moved the video from one side of the bench where I was doing the doors to the other side of the bench. And I just started all over. Again, it's okay to tell yourself no. Like, no, this is not good. I need to stop. And unfortunately, it was like that happened this week in the editing process. I'm editing this video. And I'm like, this is dumb. Like, this is, and I'm not, I feel like I'm pretty nerdy, and like my flavor of comedy is very dad joke and like, you know, like, I don't know. Like, hopefully people like the videos I'm making. I think they're doing well. That Miterfold video went super viral. So
the account's definitely a lot more active and engaged.
It really
engaging,
is.
So.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's going. That's me.
I say it's good. I said engaging.
Oh.
Calm down.
Okay.
Calm down.
I'm annoying people more. So I mean, but yeah, so that's what's on the bench. I got a bunch of jigs. I've got, there's a new Cyclone dust collector that came out. So it's a wall mount Ooh. Dust collector, but actually has a cyclone, and it's like a rollout drum on the bottom with a bag for the dust, and it has a HEPA filter on the side with a bag for that. Like, it is super nice, and it's like $1,600. Like, it's cheaper than like anything else out there, and it's 1250 CFM. So that showed up this week, and I'm really excited about that. So, but in order to do that, I got to rearrange everything. I don't know if you guys saw that video that I put like a lumber rack under my lumber rack, and then in between it another lumber rack, and then I was like, is this stupid? And I kind of threw that question out to the community, and a lot of people were like, no, this is great. And then the other half was like,
you're stupid.
Yeah. Why did you do this? And I was like, I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Like, I don't think it was a great idea, but I'm going to redo that whole shop area corner so that I move everything, and I'm going to put that dust collector in. So there's a lot going on for the day job, but I also like, I can't totally tear the shop apart because I have commissions. And
keep working.
Yeah, I got like Etsy signs, my little measure twice, cut once, where I cut the E off. Like, those are starting to kick up again. I just made another batch of like 10 of those are listed, and two of them already sold. So it's like, I know I'm going to be needing to make more of those soon. So it's a balance. But what you got going on in your shop there, Petey?
My shop up until like 10 minutes before the show started was basically like a bomb went off last week. I had a bunch of sheet goods delivered last week to work on a van. So my buddy Carmine, the van sat here for a month and a half while he was in, you know, traveling around the world. He was in Italy, and he just went like basically backpacking by himself through like Italy, Istanbul, like a bunch of other countries.
That's so awesome.
he had a blast. And the van sat here the whole time because I was working on other stuff. And then he came back, and I ordered some material. We started building stuff out. So I tore out all the old temporary structures, stuff that if you're unfamiliar with the whole van saga, this kid, Carmine, I love this dude like a brother, but he got this van like 10 years ago, 7 years ago. So it's like 7, 8 years ago.
I think you've been
like
talking about the van the whole time this podcast has been going.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Because I put in the first built-ins and stuff in there when we were still in the old shop pre-COVID, because it was for one festival that one weekend. And it was like temporary seating and temporary bed and whatever, like framed out some of it. And it's been in there for 4 years now. So I just tore it all out. I just left the bed frame and like the sheathing, and I resheathed everything. I redid the floor. I put up new panels on the ceiling, and then started building out the actual cabinets. Now we're trying to keep the weight very much down on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like usually you'd go one cabinet and you pop it in, you do another cabinet against it, and they're, you know, side by side. But like, that's two sheets of plywood there.
Sure.
I don't need that extra weight.
Oh, man.
You know, if anyone saw, Jason Hibbs is redoing the Airstream right now, and he's literally like cutting holes out just to remove material in there. And that's kind of like what you got to do with this too. But I'm trying to, first of all hail the Craig jig. That thing is amazing. The new one's a K4. That thing is just, because it auto adjusts
like the
different thicknesses.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it auto adjusts the different thicknesses. It's amazing.
Is that the one you got at Workbench Con? Stole from Kamani?
No, that's the one I got from Jeff and Jess because they won it in the giveaway at the end. And I'm I don't need this. I have one. I'm like, I'll take it. So
you
I use the heck
have,
out of
man.
That thing. Yeah, that thing is dope. And
so go to Workbench Con and form
relationships. And be nice to
people. Okay,
form relationships.
Yeah. What do you know? It's all about relationships.
Step one. Step three, profit. So we started framing it all out. We got The other thing was there's a fridge that goes in there, but it's a top-loading fridge, almost like a cooler, but it's fridge-freezer. And so I needed to run the electrical, and I needed to cut holes for venting, and I needed to place it in there so that it wouldn't move. And then the annoying thing is the top, it's going to be a countertop, but I need to be able to open it. Uh-huh. So temporarily for this trip, I just took a nice piece of plywood, Baltic birch ply, and finished it with some Halcyon so it's water resistant. But I had to cut the backs off of the two sections where the lids are, because the lid would lift up and like want to clip the wall.
Yeah.
So what I want to try to do for the permanent solution is actually, have you ever seen like a high-end home where the fridge is built into the wall? And then when you open like a wooden, you know, big wooden cabinet, it's actually the fridge door you're opening, but it's on like a slide, a drawer slide almost. So as you're pivoting the door out,
the whole thing,
the
comes
front
out.
Panel yeah. is like riding on the front of the fridge door. So same thing for this, where like when you lift it up, it's actually going to be attached by that drawer slide and kind of slide up to shift. And it's really hard to visualize.
I'm struggling over here.
Basically, if I just do like a piano hinge on the top and lift it up, that's fine. But I'm lifting that up separate from the bottom lid. That's actually the cooler. So I'm trying to make it so that they're both moving together. But if they move together, you won't be able to open it because it's going to be glued.
The countertop is sitting on the lid and they both move independently.
Yeah, so they need to shift together. It's a whole pain in the butt project.
You have two things like this. As this comes up, this moves forward.
Yeah. It's called refraction.
This visual on a podcast, is this helping everyone?
No. It's not even helping me, and I can see you talking about it.
You can see me.
So, anyways, but that's the whole thing. So I built it out as much as I could. They picked it up today, and it's in really good shape. A lot of usable space. We need to finish up some cabinets, drawers, and then working on the overhead cabinets. And we can start sheathing in the walls completely, you know, with whatever he chooses. But that's the whole project.
You're using all Rockler hardware for that, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yes. All right. And I will be using it for the next thing that we're working on today we started actually sketching out the plans for, which is we're going to be redoing our laundry room, pantry, mudroom thing.
I saw Emma's story about that.
Yeah. Emma did her first story on the Peaches Workshop account, like as her on her phone. So that was exciting. But anyways, we're redoing the laundry room off of our kitchen, because we kind of, the idea that we're having is like a butler's pantry / laundry room. Butler's pantry is basically just a pantry that looks like a kitchen without usually like without a sink or whatever. It's just countertops and cabinets. And you can have appliances in there so that they're always set up, but they're not in your kitchen taking up space.
Is there like a space for the butler to sleep? Or?
Well, that's where the servants.
Like a cot?
Hang out, you know, and you're like, Reginald, I'd like my chalada. And
then he comes out. my butler would be named Belvedere.
Belvedere?
For sure.
Chalada, please. Or chalada would be the name.
The only butler I ever had was Ask Jeeves.
Hey, that's a good guy.
We all had that butler in the 90s.
So we're just basically planning stuff out for that, because it's going to be hard to try to combine, you know, different heights of cabinets. I have to do custom cabinets for everything, because the washing machines are at 39 inches tall, so the counter is going to be at 39, or really like around 40. So we're going to continue that all the way around. So instead of doing 36, we're going to be doing 40, and that's going to,
you don't want to like step it down off of the, that's pretty high,
might,
man.
But it's actually quite comfortable. It's almost like it's lower than a standing desk, so like it's a, I don't know. It's at a,
it's
good
comfortable
height.
Unless you have a box of something. Like then you're working up here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The problem is it's a fairly narrow room. So if we do a step down, there's like dead space behind, or like to the next to the washing machines. We're trying to make it so that you can actually like put laundry baskets in there and take them out. Mm-hmm. And if we do a step down, I'm losing that height, and that's dead space now. So we're trying to utilize it, and we're trying to work out all the details. I got to see if it's going to be cheaper to just buy cabinet bottoms and tops, or buy the material and do it myself with the time it's going to take. So we got to figure that part out.
What are you doing for the tops?
Content would be better.
Well, content would be better, yeah. But I mean, I can buy pre-made bases and stuff and assemble it, and I'm still going to do my own top. And
what kind of top are you doing?
I have an idea. Hear me out.
Okay.
If it's cheaper to buy the pre-made bases, take them apart, re-put them back together and record it and make it seem like you did it.
I mean, either way, there's going to be a just good lie. Amount of the element is going to be pre-made. So it's going to be actually, I'll probably be doing a lot of like pocket hole joinery for the cabinets because it's just quick and dirty and easy. I want to be using a bunch of Rockler hardware.
Hey, side note, you know? There's nothing wrong with that. It's okay.
I know. Oh, it's I know. Okay. Yeah. But I'm going to use a combination of Domino and Lamello for the face frames because I'm Keith Johnson. Love you, Keith. He probably listens to this. I don't know.
Dude, there's nothing wrong with pocket holes for quick and dirty stuff. And if nobody's going to see it.
So
I mean,
many
pocket holes. Your I feel like pocket- shop,
your own house. If you're doing a commission for somebody, obviously you want to make something that's, you know,
I feel
worth
like
tons of money.
Pocket holes were made for cabinetry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think
absolutely.
That's where they were invented.
There's nothing wrong with
honestly.
It,
yep.
I don't know. So, I don't understand all the hate against pocket holes. Like, I'm not going to make like heirloom furniture that's pocket hole together.
I have. Come at me, bro.
Did you plug your holes?
Maybe. You don't know.
Okay. I built a bunch of heirloom furniture in a van with pocket holes.
If there, I don't know. Great. Like, there's a place for it. There's certain
all
times.
All of it is going to be hidden, basically. Yeah, I can put plugs in. I have the plug cutter that comes with the K4, the special deck, the full kit. But, you know, you can cut plugs, match up all the grain and everything. It's so easy to put the stuff together. And I'm going to have to do a ton of custom fittings in there. So I figured, you know, I got to hit up Craig and be like, yo, what's up, guys?
Time is money, man. Pocket holes.
Yeah, and it's just a quick way to do it. So anyways, that's getting planned out. Oh, we're going to like probably start that next week, which is crazy. Also, oh my God, next week. My parents are coming.
Oh.
So, like that snuck up on me. So my folks are coming back because they come to visit every 6 months, which is great because now I have somebody to sand. Thanks, Pops. That man loves sanding.
That's so awesome. I love that your dad loves the sand.
Oh, he loves the shop.
Does he come really, in though, or like, does he just tell you that?
He just loves being in the shop and hanging out.
Pete won't let him do anything else. So he's just like, okay,
They called me the other day and were like, make sure you have some projects for your dad to do in the shop, like he's sanding or whatever. And I'm like,
okay.
Oh, okay. Don't twist my arm.
He just wants to be with you, and you just keep giving him a sander. Come on.
That's adorable.
At least I can do.
Do pottery with your dad. Yeah.
And aside from that, it's just been working on like admin stuff with Emma, trying to get some stuff sorted out. We're also, and we have a question about this, kind of in like...
We have more questions?
We have two questions, actual questions that weren't related to the topic.
Season two, but, mixing it up.
Season two. But
I'm
the
kerbobbled.
Yeah, the whole thing, we're like in panic mode about like, oh, we're not making more money instantly with Emma coming on. Like, why aren't we making an extra $5,000 a month immediately? But like, that's it's a ramp up.
Why is the money not doubled or tripled like, yet? What's going on?
I literally didn't have her until like last week starting to come in, and then this week it's like actually she's there all the time and we're working on stuff all the time. I'm like, this is awesome. I need to think of more tasks because like, there's literally like, I'll give her some tasks thinking it'll take whatever amount of time because she's busy. It's like, no, she's done in 30 minutes. And I'm like, let me think what else I can show you.
Structuring that? Are you writing out structures? Like, okay, here's your,
I will answer that next week because that's something we're actually working out. This week is
coming,
that week.
Coming from like, working in machine shops and stuff like that. Like that was one of the biggest things for me was like when I was an employee, I had a boss that told me what to do all the time.
And then it was like a schedule of things to accomplish.
Basically, yeah. And almost then, like a habit tracker, a daily task list that we're going to be trying to hit every single day. And then we're going to have a separate one that's every week. And then pending projects or whatever.
One of the biggest things for me, I don't know if you even need to hear this. Sorry, I'm just throwing it out there just because I feel like I should share.
It's a podcast. We want to hear it, of course.
One of the biggest things for me when I was like actual production manager and boss and stuff was I didn't start my day until I wrote my day down. So I would say, okay,
that was me at Apple, same thing.
Yeah,
I
had to, like,
write out everything I was going to do that day. Otherwise, it would not get done.
Yeah, I based it out of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He has like a 4 quadrant section thing in there. So there's quadrant 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then there's, you break everything down in priority, basically, of that. And you want to live in quadrant 2 so that you can do high level things. And you want to prioritize, like the biggest thing that makes you effective is saying, this is something that is important and needs to be done, but not by me.
Yeah.
And then, that's kind of what we're figuring out now. You start delegating. Yeah.
So by next week, I'm hoping to have some kind of like schedule for us to actually follow every day. So yeah, I'm excited about that. But Dan, what's on your bench? I'm sorry, we're kind of both rambling here.
You guys are way more busy than me.
Oh, no. I want to hear it.
I got these bow ties.
Don't hate on that. That's what feeds the family.
I'm going to start making tons of bow ties. I'm about to become your competition, actually.
Please don't. Business is bad now, so don't do that to me currently. That's bad. My kids are currently eating cabbage soup, so it's been a little slow. No, it has been slow. It's been a little slower than normal. I'm sure other people would look at my weeks and go, wow, that's a pretty good week. But when I'm used to a certain number, you know, it's like, oh, gosh, this is bad. The sky is falling. What am I going to do? Oh, my God, I'm going to have to go get a job at Menards.
Free mayo.
Well, employee discount mayo, at least.
20%.
That's all I ask, really, Adam. It's employee discount on the mayo, please.
This is about to expire. Can I have this?
Oh, you're going to throw that out? Yeah, business has been a little slow. But from what I understand, and looking back at other metrics that I've seen in years past, it's a pretty standard thing at this time of year, you know.
Tis not the season.
No, it's not the season. It's just the slow period. So, but I have had a few orders for those C tables that I make, those slide tables, as I call them. I finished three of them this week, which has been fun. It's all the same stuff. It has
those are
helped.
High dollar,
it,
right?
I mean, I don't know what you mean by high dollar. I charge $375 for them.
That's good. I mean, that's
and then I,
better than
you know,
a
it's like $100
tray or cutting board.
It's $375 on Etsy, and then I think material and everything. I'm all in like $100. So
that's not bad.
But so that doesn't include time. But
and shipping
I have.
I never want to go less than 30% profit. If something is going to be expensive, like I don't, I want
the profit
to make
margin on there is like 41%. Yeah. I've
See,
done the
that's,
math.
That's good.
It's okay. Yeah, shipping is included in those, so that's nice. But yeah, you know, I do get burnt. I've had a few people from Alaska buy those. That the shipping to Alaska. Oh my God. If you folks from Alaska could quit buying those tables, that'd be great.
You know, in
but thank you.
You can turn that off.
Yeah, I can. But I'm just
so you're just
making
mad at yourself.
I'm just making complaints, and I really have none.
I mean, you're still making money after that, right? Or is it?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All in all, I'm still making money. I may have lost a little money on those two, but I've sold like what 50 of those things. So
to the
I'm still
Etsy
waiting.
Algorithm, that's a win too, because it's going to say, "Hey, more sales, push this."
Exactly, exactly, and that's how I look at it. The more you sell, the more Etsy will push your product. So you know, it's a win either way. Speaking of Etsy, I've actually, I ran into a little problem with Etsy last week, and I've been talking to Pete about this because it's kind of a bummer. Now, like, not only am I dealing with sales being down right now, but I had an Etsy order that was a little overdue, and they flagged my account or something. It seems like the last couple weeks, I've had nothing but problems with Etsy. You know, like, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how one of my orders got flagged for drug paraphernalia. Like,
yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Was that you, son?
Yeah, you're my competition. I want to make the zero.
Are you making ZCIs now?
Ties. Yeah.
So not only was
drugs,
I dealing
drugs,
with that,
drugs,
but
drugs.
I got flagged for something. I don't even know what it was. They can't give me a straight answer. But I think it might be because one of my orders was a little late, but I've been dealing with, they put my account into like a payment reserve, which is, if you're familiar with Etsy, you know that you get paid almost instantaneously whenever somebody buys a product from you. That doesn't mean that it goes into your bank account right away, but like you will get that money as soon as your deposit is coming up. So
yeah,
like,
whatever your schedule you set.
Yeah. So, like, they don't hold on to it typically. If so my deposits are on Monday, and if somebody buys something from me on, like, a Saturday or Sunday before Monday, I will get that money in my deposit for that coming Monday. So now it seems like, I don't know what happened. Like I said, I think the only thing that I can contribute it to is the fact that I was a little slow on an order. They're holding everything until it has been put into the system as sent out and has been delivered. It's doing delivered now. So like last week sucked because, you know, like instead of getting the money that they put into my account, I had to wait until everything was delivered. So it kind of like put a week delay on everything. So last week I only got like a $50 deposit, which is really bad. Really bad when you expect
Well, now it's resetting itself as stuff is getting delivered.
It's totally resetting itself and it everything's coming back to normal. So
that's good at least.
So you'll get all of that in the next week and following weeks,
hopefully.
Right? So
hopefully.
Jump back.
It's making
me getting a $50 paycheck for the week. So.
It makes trust me. I love my wife. I love her dearly, but she is of the. Oh, excuse me. Chiladas are coming up. My wife is of the mentality that the sky is falling always, and if something like that is to happen, it's like, oh my god, this is the end of the world. Oh my gosh, you're gonna have to go and get another job. I'm like, well, calm down, Mrs. Dunlap. There'll be no other jobs had. I'm working in my shop. So
Menards would be lucky to have you.
Welcome to Casey's. I'm Dan. What can I get on your pizza?
You make jokes, but that's probably where I'd go. yeah, so it's all that said, it's been a pretty stressful week, but things are looking good. So
they're looking up. That's awesome.
I'm happy.
That's good.
Yeah. And then, you know, one of these days I'm going to finish that farmhouse table.
That's fun. Well, it's got
good thing that's
table
not
wise
on Etsy, because you right get flagged for that being late.
I think I talked about this last week. You know, I'm at the point where I need to cut that sucker in half and put a leaf in it. And, man, I thought
– Did you get that Rockler leaf?
Yes, I did. I got the Rockler. I got
the
wooden,
one made out of paper.
I got the wooden slides.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember I messaged you about it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I figured it out. I think I figured out how to do it. But, like, I am so – I don't know why. I don't know why I'm so intimidated about cutting this table in half after I built it. Like, I'm just at that point where everything needs to be cut in half.
Cutting a table
Hey, Dan.
Hard.
I'm going to help you out right here. As a friend, I love you.
Okay.
Just do it.
Just do it?
The worst that can happen is that you totally screw it up and you just...
Yeah, two small tables.
You just start over.
Did you hear where I only made $50 last week? Did you hear that?
But it's all coming. It all comes around. And nothing will ever happen, and you will never get paid if you don't just do it. Just
That's
do it.
True. That's so true.
It up.
Just do it.
Okay, next week I'll do it. Okay.
You got this. You are a fantastic woodworker.
Hold you accountable
next
week.
You're inspiring to us all. We love your work. You can do it. You got this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then, aside from all that, I have to get up early tomorrow morning and drive to Minneapolis. It's going to be about a five and a half hour drive for my brother's wedding. I am shooting his wedding.
Oh.
With a camera. It'll be the last wedding I ever photograph ever in my whole life.
I've heard many photographers say that. Did you know I was a photographer for a few years?
We're not shocked.
I'm not shocked at all at this point. No, this will absolutely be the last time because I've sold every camera that I own but one. Like, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. Aside from like the errant like
weddings are hard work, man. Oh my god.
Weddings suck.
That is the worst job other than like fast food.
I enjoyed it for a very good amount of time. I was a wedding photographer from 2009 till this year, 2023. So what is
that? There's a lot of money in it.
There's good money in it. My wife and I sat down. We figured it out. I've made close to, and I'm fully honest here. Like, I'm not just trying to like stroke my ego. I made close to $1 million.
Yeah.
On wedding photography.
That's awesome.
But I've shot like almost 400 weddings.
Yeah, that's
like,
nice.
I've been to 400 weddings, y'all.
Dude,
I am
so
sick
much
and tired
time
of weddings.
Always a photographer, never the bride.
Only once.
I'm so overwhelmed.
His brother is about to get the third time.
So, yeah, I've been dealing with that. My brother and his fiance called me a couple days ago just to make sure everything, I had everything like under control. I'm like,
did they hire you or are you just like, oh,
they asked me and I was like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I'm not going to charge my brother money. Plus I shot my sister's, I shot my sister's wedding in 2018. So I couldn't very well like tell him no. So
I'm not charging for the shoot, only for the prints.
Just tell I'm literally going to give them the memory card.
This is the last one.
I'm giving him the memory card. I'm going to be like, yo, it's on you. I'm done. Bye bye. But yeah, they called me and they wanted to make sure everything was like, everything was cool. And I had the timeline. I'm like, you guys have any idea how many times I've done this? Don't even worry about it. I got this. I can do this with my eyes closed. So yeah, I just have a feeling they're going to be a little tough to deal with. So anyway, that's
it'll
my
be
week.
Good, though. It'll be family. It'll be fun.
It should be.
Open bar?
It better be. It's going to be for me.
It's open for me, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It better be open bar for me. I don't care about anybody else. Anyway, I think that's it for what's on our bench, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Back
into questions. Let's jump in. Well, I mean, yeah, let's finish up those questions real quick. We're at an hour 30, so let's very quickly answer these questions here. First one's from Malcolm.
Hey guys, it's Malcolm with Bossa Nova Woodworks, and I just want to thank you for having Adam of No Trades on this week. It's about time that you guys had a high-quality guest on, and welcome, Adam. I appreciate you. So my question this week is about an epoxy project I've been working on. It's an 8x10-inch wooden tile mosaic. I've established about a half-inch thick of background by working in layers with Total Boat high-performance epoxy and black diamond pigments to establish a dark background. It used to be glass smooth and fully cured, so then I set all my wooden tiles after sealing them into the mold on top of this glass smooth layer. Then I noticed that the surface of the dark background had some smudges. So I broke out some denatured alcohol, started wiping it down, but it just sort of smeared everything around. Is there something I should use to clean this before I dump another inch of thick set epoxy on top of it, which is going to be clear? Or should I just pour another thin layer of black on it before I go any further? Okay, thanks.
Do I have the most epoxy experience here?
Probably.
Based on what I'm hearing, maybe it wasn't cured fully, but I would probably pour a very, very thin layer, which would actually help all the pieces bond down anyways.
And so then, he's already got the pieces stuck so he, in a layer?
No, I think he laid them out. So I think he did the black layer, then he put his pieces on top, but it like scuffed up the, maybe it wasn't cured fully everywhere when he was laying it out still. So he's afraid that when he pours clear on it, there's going to be those marks and dents and things in there.
So it's not exactly a flat surface anymore.
I'm imagining a damaged first top layer. So when he pours on it, he's afraid he's going to be able to see the damage.
He's setting tiles on top of... So he poured epoxy and that cured, mm-hmm. and now he's setting... He soaked epoxy around wood tiles, and he's setting those yep. on that surface?
Yeah, he's setting it on that surface.
And he's going to pour epoxy on top of that?
Mm-hmm. So sanding is out of the question.
They're going to float, and they're...
That was my thought, too. That's why I was like... Down? He should pour a thin layer and almost use it like glue to set.
Yeah,
in their
spots. I would do another tabletop
like
layer.
I'd do a super thin
inch,
layer of like
tops eighth
penetrating epoxy because it's like really.
It's not going to penetrate anything. It's epoxy.
Yeah,
on
it's
epoxy.
Already
no, but you don't want it there. To penetrate. You just want it to be less viscous, so it gets in between all the cracks and crevices.
Okay. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
My fear with that would be that the penetrating would soak into all the wood tiles.
Which would be fine.
But don't you want
he
that?
Already said he coated the wood tiles in epoxy, so they're already epoxy covered.
Oh, he did.
I would sand all the bottoms of all those tiles, sand the top of what you're putting them on. When you put new epoxy on top of that, all that sanding is going to disappear. It's going to fill in all those gaps and it's going to go clear again. So it's okay. So I would scuff that top. I would put a real thin layer of the same epoxy, that tabletop, the quick curing stuff, put that layer down, I would wait a couple hours till it's tacky, and then I would set all those wood tiles in that so that they're going to bond into that and not like float and move weird. Let that cure. Then the next day, once that's cured, pour your thick set
exactly
epoxy
what I would
on
do
top
well.
Of all of that.
Okay. That's I'm very confused about what's going on. So yes to whatever.
Epoxy layer sand. Pour fresh tabletop epoxy. Let that get tacky for a couple hours. Set those wood tiles in. Let that fully cure 24 hours the next day. Pour the thick set over all of it. Because then they won't float
anymore.
In place. Yeah, they'll hold the wood in place. That's going to cover up all of your scratches. Your scratches won't show.
Soak your corks.
There you go. There's your answer.
All right, and the last one is this it? I think this is it. From Scotty Holland?
Scott Holland.
What up? This is Scott from LVA Wood Design. Question about when you guys are having kind of lean weeks or lean months. What is your way of dealing with that, and how do you fix it? Anyway, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Alcohol and crying.
Yep, there you go. That's exactly what I was going to say.
And we both talked about it with Etsy and like with Emma coming on. So I'll take this one first. But like
go right ahead.
Emma coming on right now, I feel like we're in lean times because her coming on was like, it's not like this again, like we're hiring someone and suddenly I'm doing double the work. I am training her on everything. It's orientation every single day. And it's literally costing me time right now. So we're in that stage where like this, we're building the base that's going to hold this, pyramid together. Like that's going to allow us to make more money. And like the conscious part of my mind is like, yeah, that's great. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be very lucrative for us. But the crazy part of me is like, we're never going to make enough money. And then I'm going to have to like get a second job. And I'm
we're
not going to support
like
my family.
In a steel tube.
I'm less of a man, it's all like, you stress about this stuff. And here's the thing. The fact of the matter is at the end of the day, and I said this to Scotty, cause we talked on the phone a little bit today, is like, you're in a very fortunate position to do absolutely everything about the situation you're in. You're not in lean times because your boss won't give you work. You're in lean times or a raise. You're in lean times because you need to jump to the next level of what your business is. And I heard this quote about a week ago on TikTok, and I was like, they were setting it up like it was going to be this deep quote. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of like, okay, this wasn't really what I was expecting. Every single day I've repeated this quote to myself and it's hitting me really hard. And that is the reason I haven't succeeded in my business to the level that I want to be on is because I subconsciously am scared of the responsibility of what the next stage of the business will entail. And it didn't hit me at the time when I heard it. I was like, oh, whatever. And then every single day I've been thinking about it. Like I am legitimately not starting the tasks because I'm afraid of the work that'll come with it. Not that I can't do it, but that I will become overwhelmed and I'm basically afraid to take the next step, and it's slowing down my business growth. Whether it's hiring an employee, whether it's getting another machine, whether it's doing whatever, So it's scary, man. When we all go through it. And if anyone ever is in a rut or having a bad day, shoot me a message. Let's hop on a call. Let's talk about it because we're all in this together. And it's easy to see these people succeeding online. And you're like, well, how come I'm not doing $25,000 a month deals? Like, well, you don't know what that person's going through too. It might be 25,000, but then like they're just constantly working and exhausted and tired or whatever. And like, I mean, look at Mike. Like Mike's killing it. Like Mike's working. Ooh. Like crazy. Cafe Custom Wilds, something like that.
Never heard of him.
But yeah, so don't compare yourself to other people online.
Yeah, you don't know what they're not showing you.
Exactly.
Don't compare your life to somebody's highlight reel.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people out there that share all their business section and you see them killing it and crushing it and all this stuff. And then you find out they have no friends. They do no hobbies. They ignore their children or their significant other. And like, that's no life. Like, you need to find that balance. And like, you can't compare yourself to social media because you're not seeing all that other side. And you have to find that own balance in yourself.
Putting food on a table and a business is doing well. And if you have more work than you know what to do with, that's a good problem. Let's find a solution. Dan, what do you think? Got any other tips?
I don't know what he's talking about. I've never had lean times. I don't know.
No.
Like, everything else I just talked about didn't happen.
$50 covers his mortgage. He lives in Nebraska.
Look, yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, Pete joked about, like, oh, I just drink a lot. Well, man, I'll tell you, brother, that's probably the way I look at things. And
I'm not open. I drink healthy when I'm sad. I'm sorry.
I have, and I forgot to bring this up on What's on My Bench, but I have, like, taken a step back and looked at other things. Like, I have all my eggs in one basket right now, which is Etsy. There are so many other baskets out there. So I've taken a step back. I'm like, okay, what do I need to do? I can't just rely on Etsy because it's not going to be like ironclad. It's not going to – I don't know if I can count on it for everything. So there are other platforms out there. There are Shopify. There are, you know, TikTok Shop. There's Instagram Shop. So I'm looking at all that stuff. And I've started talking to my daughter who's 14 now. And she's going to – I'm kind of starting to like – show her how to do social media and be my camera person. And we've kind of put our toes in the water there a little bit. And I'd like to be able to bring her on as like a social media type manager. But that's really like
cool
in the future. So it's baby steps right now. So she's come out there with me for like a couple hours one day. So It's really, really baby steps right now. But that's what I do. That's what I'm trying to get to. Like, I just kind of step back and think about ways that you can change things or diversify and stuff like that. So,
or bring on help in some way. Offload some tasks that you don't need to be doing.
I mean, it's hard to bring on help when you're already lean, right? I mean, help costs money. So I'm lucky in that my daughter is willing to do this with the promise of possible future pay, right?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of people would be willing to do that at this point.
Wow. Sounds like a pyramid scheme.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Except there's it's more of a child it's more of an upside down triangle at this point.
Anyway. Adam, any tips for lean times?
Yeah, I mean, stressing? That's a good point. With
is the, it just go back to the machine shop? Is that
I am
because I don't
do
have one.
Everything in my life to make sure that I don't have to go back to that place.
Right on.
I feel that so much. You
I
have
mean,
no
they
idea.
They reached out to me this year. They asked me to come back, and it was a pretty hard no. Going back to that, it's okay to say no because I knew that's not what I want in my life anymore, and things are very different for me. This is the weirdest job I've ever had. I work from home, which I'm not used to. You know, I've spent 20 years of my life going to jobs, getting up at 4, 5 a.m. and going to jobs and working my butt off for 10, 12 hours and then going to my next job and then, you know, trying to fit in dinner and kids and school and all that life in the middle of it. Like, it's always been lean times for me. I was an idiot that had kids way too early, and it's been tough, man. But what you do is, so I've studied a lot of stoicism and a lot of, I don't want to call them self-help books, but like skills to manage.
Tony Robbins.
You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like the biggest one for me was the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Like, that was my major eye opener. But you look back through time and all these people that just had it together. There's certain things, there's these things that copy throughout time and are timeless. And no matter how hard it is and no, no matter how rough everything is right now, like there's these certain things that you just tell yourself, like, no matter what's going on right now, it's going to pass. This isn't forever. And I have choice between stimulus, hard times, and response, drinking, crying, whatever. In between that is the human ability to choose. And once I realized I had that power, that's my superpower. Call me a comic nerd, whatever. That's my superpower. Mm-hmm. I can choose how I react to any situation. So when times get hard, I can go, oh my God, I'm going to give up and cripple. And that's okay to feel emotions and not be happy with how things are going. But I'm not going to sit with that forever. I'm going to choose to go, man, this sucks, but I'm going to change it. I'm going to get to work. You know what? Okay, what can I do? And like Dan just said, there's other avenues. So he's got all the eggs in the Etsy basket, but oh, there's Shopify and there's all these other things that I can sell and do.
My own website, even.
Your own website. Which I need to get. The exact same thing that you're doing, there's other ways to diversify that. So you're looking at these other options, and that's the light at the end of the tunnel. So when things get thin, income is low, that's not forever, man. Because you can make it not forever. You can choose how you change things. You have that power. So that's one of the biggest things, man, is like, however much it sucks right now, just change it. Just do it. Like I was telling Dan earlier, you want to get that table done? Just do it. Just do it. Like, that's it. You have that power to just get up. You need to, oh, I don't have enough time. Get up earlier. I let my health slip. You know, I used to run triathlons and do all kinds of crazy exercise stuff. I spent 5 days a week in the gym. Well, life is too busy now. I got so much more going on, but I need to take care of myself so that I have more energy to work, to do two jobs at once, to be there for my family and stuff. I started getting up at 5 a.m. again, even though I'm not in the machine shop, and I go to the gym 3 times a week. Like, you just choose and figure out what you can do, and you have that power, and it's just a choice. And you want to do something that has a great outcome, it might be a hard road. But honestly, all the best things in life are down at the end of that hard road, and it's totally worth it.
Why do I feel like I'm being attacked all of a sudden?
You're not. Okay. I'm telling you that you are doing it, and you are
I'm not awesome, getting up man. At 5 and going to the gym, Adam.
You don't have to.
It's not happening.
But you are looking at, hey, things are tough right now. What do I have to do to fix this? Hey, maybe I can have my daughter learn how to do some cool
camera. Maybe I can get my daughter to go to the gym for me.
No, yes. Maybe you can have your daughter hold the camera while you do
outsource
work.
Outsource the workout.
Maybe you can put the same things for sale on other avenues. You're finding other options, yes. And it's making things better. And that's because you chose to make the situation better. That's all I'm saying is it's just a choice. So when times get hard, what do? When things are lean? You choose to make them not. You just do it.
Lean times are just a small valley in the journey of life.
Hard times make strong people. Easy times make weak people. There's nothing wrong with it being tough right now, because when you come out of it, you're going to be stronger.
You guys are coming in with these deep quotes. I got nothing.
Deep thoughts with Adam Barnett. Here we go. Anyway, I think we've gone long enough, you guys.
Oh my
okay.
God, almost 2 hours.
If you don't dig deep, you don't find diamonds.
Unless I've seen people find diamonds in a creek bed, so they're not really digging.
Stop going for those are gems. Blood diamonds in Africa. That's not cool, man.
But that's not digging, though, is it? I don't
know. I'll just buy mine online.
You don't dig deep, you don't find coal.
There it is. That's a good one.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap this up. Thank you, Adam, for being on the show this week.
My
pleasure. Really appreciate you. This has been a really great talk. Thank you, everybody that listens and shares our show. Thank you, thank you, thank you to our patrons. You know who you are, and especially thank you to our VIP patrons. We appreciate you guys so much. We're going to be back next week with Suman, I believe.
Yeah, Sumon's on next week.
That's going to be awesome.
And thank you.
Yes.
That's it. How's that for an outro?
That's pretty amazing. Good. I love it. See y'all
okay,
next week.
Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Hey, love you long time.
Bye.